Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis. Welcome to podcast number 32 with Mark Sima in China. We're talking about his science fiction novel based on facts, The Texas Lights. And then we get into the serious topic of UFOs and how that's viewed worldwide. It's a very interesting show today, and I hope you enjoy it. If you'd like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, those icons are right on our website. If you'd like to contact me, that's martin@podcastufo.com. Thank you for listening. I'm on Skype all the way to Beijing, China with Mark Sima. How are you doing, Mark?
Hi, Martin. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. And Mark is the author of a science fiction book, but he has so much more to say. And the name of that book is Texas Lights. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, Mark?
Well, I was born in Switzerland. I grew up in Paris. And from my late teens, I started to spend a lot of time in Canada on a family ranch way north in Smithers, British Columbia. And my background is in diplomacy and international aid. In the 90s, I was a junior diplomat for the European Union, and I was their political and press officer in Cairo. And then for many years, I worked for an aid agency of the Spanish Ministry of Commerce, and I conducted development works in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. We did public health, airport, communication, environmental projects, and so on. And now I live in China, where I write and teach at a Beijing university. And I have the opportunity to share my life experience with Chinese students, Chinese youth. And that is a very rewarding and meaningful exchange.
Wow, what a pedigree you have. This is really great that someone like you is interested in the UFO subject in general. What would you like to do next? Would you like to talk about your book?
Yes, certainly. Texas Lights is... was published this fall. It's part of a series of novels that I'm writing. And the series follows the adventure of Paul Medoc, a Canadian spy, from the end of the Cold War to the present day. And I realized that we read a lot about American spies, about UK spies, but there are not many heroes coming from your friendly neighbor north of the border. So anyway, I felt Canada deserved another one. So I invented Medoc, a kind of Tintin for grown-ups. Canada is close, or the closest ally of the United States, as together they share most of the North American continent. At the same time, it is a separate country with its own history, its own political and security institutions, its own set of national interests. So Paul Medoc, being Canadian, I think can provide, I hope, an interesting perspective for American readers on subjects such as new challenges of the 21st century, the war on terror, or for what interests us today, the UFO phenomena. So Texas Lights starts almost exactly 5 years ago, when in January 8, 2008, strange lights are reported by many witnesses above the city of Stephenville. What interested me most in this particular event, and this is very much the premise for this book, is in addition of being a massive sighting, the most important UFO event since Phoenix, Arizona in 97, this very large object was seen traveling towards the presidential ranch, you know, the Western White House, as it was nicknamed then. And we know now, thanks to the 5 million hits of raw radar data that was analyzed, that the object was detected just 10 miles from the ranch. And I wondered, what would have happened if the United States president had been there that day? A massive and unknown object, the size or larger than a football stadium, going straight at him in our post-9/11 world. And all this being observed by an AWACS plane and a number of jet fighters. So I really got my story when I asked myself, what if the president was not just there on vacation, but was about to receive the Prime Minister of Canada for an official visit? You know, Putin had been to the Texas ranch, and many more presidents had been there. So the novel starts in Ottawa with the Prime Minister very much looking forward to start his trip. It's an important occasion for him politically, but also personally, because it's the first international outing together with his new wife. And just before takeoff, the Americans ask for a 2 hours delay, followed by another delay, before the trip is canceled altogether. And as expected, when we are dealing with a UFO event, and the U.S. government is saying nothing. mm-hmm. even to his close ally. The American side absolutely refused that day or later to provide any kind of explanation other than saying that there had been a serious security breach at the ranch. So the prime minister is extremely upset, and he feels that he has been, to an extent, ridiculed in front of his press corps, and he and his wife in front of the whole world. So although he knows the risk of doing so, he requests that the best agent of CSIS be sent to Erath County, Texas. And CSIS is the Canadian Security and Intelligence Service, the equivalent of the U.S. Service, Secret Service, in charge of VIPs and diplomatic missions protection. But it's also the Canadian equivalent of the CIA. And the best secret agent is no other than Paul Medoc, now in his 40s, director of operation. He's already very busy trying to keep Canada safe, and he's preparing for an upcoming G20 summit of heads of government in Vancouver. So Medoc really has other pressing matters than chasing UFOs in Texas. He knows enough about that matter to believe that it's very unlikely for him to find anything decisive or even new on the issue a month after a dozen of reporters, UFO investigators, have been there already. So he takes his undercover mission as a sort of a strange and dangerous vacation. And the Americans have been extremely clear that they consider the matter as a national secret and a closed case. And they have also warned Canada never to bring up the matter again, or else it could have detrimental consequences for their bilateral relations. So the U.S. and Canada are not supposed to carry out undercover operation in each other's country. That is basic, against basic rules to spy on an ally. So Medoc takes all the precaution of his trade and to travel to Stephenville undetected. And he certainly does not know that 6 days later, his life would have been changed forever. And the Stephenville event is only the start of the book. And for the rest, what Paul Medoc finds there, the people he meets, all is totally invented. I mean, it is a novel, it's a work of fiction, not a narration of field investigations. I mean, Angelia Joyner, MUFON have done that already, and much better than I could ever do. And actually, I do not think it matters much for a novel if people that day saw, red orbs or green orbs, or if there was one or many objects, or if the witness were called this or that. What I was much more interested about was to imagine how people in a small town in Texas could have been changed by it. And I was also interested to find out what would have happened to the president that day. Mm. So anyway, I tried to write a very fast-paced novel, and it's also a story of self-discovery and a story of true love. And my purpose is that the reader should have as much excitement and fun reading it than I had writing it.
Now, I've heard this type of situation called alternative history, and there's a lot of alternative history fans out there for all types of things that have happened in history. But I really like the way this weaves in a part of a true story of what actually happened into a fictional novel. It sounds great. Now, from what I've researched a little bit about the Stephenville Lights is that this object was tracked up to 2,100 miles an hour and down to 37 miles an hour. And as far as I know, there's nothing that we have of any type of technology, especially when eyewitnesses are saying it's the size of a football stadium that can move like this. How much research did you do ahead of time before you started writing this book?
I think that back then in 2008, I wrote this book last summer, so, four years later. But at the time of the event, I was I really followed it. It was a massive event, and I read everything I could on it. And I even emailed at the time Angelia Joyner, and she was very kind to answer. So I was quite shaken by it, really. We had YouTube videos, and it was all over the place. Mm-hmm. And no explanation, like in Fort Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah, but I also believe that, the UFO phenomenon is a normal and important topic that should have its place much more in mainstream contemporary fiction. I'm not sure my novel is science fiction, actually. I think it is just a novel, it's just a fiction, It's an invented story, like any others. But it's not because there is a UFO in it that then it has to be science fiction. I don't believe UFO today should only belong to investigative journalism, to science fiction, to the New Age genre. And the reason is because it's one of the most spectacular and widespread phenomena of our time. Mm-hmm. And whatever it is, it has certainly changed the life of thousands, tens of thousands of people worldwide in the last 60 years. In that sense, it is very real. Because it is so real for so many of us. I mean, Martin, yourself, because you had a particular sightings, you started doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. You have reached out to many people you would not have met otherwise. You have touched the life of others. You have changed your outlook on things. It has changed your life in a very real way.
That's right. One instant, everything changed. You're right about that.
Because it is taking such a large part of the consciousness of contemporary mankind, the UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality. This is already the opinion of the great Carl Jung, who founded analytical psychology, and who in 1954 published a book called Flying Saucers. And he writes in the first paragraph, and here I quote, "If they are real, what are they? And if they are fantasy, why should there be such a rumor?" And the meaning here is that even if UFOs are a human psychological invention, why do humans need to invent them? That mere fact obliges scientists of the caliber and honesty of Jung to seriously consider the matter, to seriously investigate. In any case, it should never be a matter of ridicule. Then we could ridicule everything that is important to the human mind. Right? Should we believe in love? I mean, we have only circumstantial evidence about that as well.
That's right.
We may also have indication telling us that it's maybe an illusion, you know, not a real thing, but we still believe in love. Should we get rid of it until science tells us that it's okay, that it is real? So more seriously, I think that in the UFO case, mockery mostly hides the person unease with something that has the potential to shake up her or his worldview. Mm-hmm. We know this process is always a rather painful one, brings, you know, first confusion and so on. So I think this is why there is so much resistance and unease about UFOs. And, of course, even much more in the case of alien abduction. I mean, the whole idea is just too terrifying for many, and understandably so. It's better to simply cast it aside. But I think the evidence, although circumstantial, is nevertheless overwhelming.
I do, too. And this is a part that, the skeptics will say, well, there's no real evidence. You don't have any real evidence. And you can liken that to many, many things. Dark matter, we really don't have evidence for either. But you're right, everything is challenged basically with ridicule and has been for many, many years. So you lived in Canada for a while, and when you lived there, what was your view on Canada versus USA and UFOs?
I should point out first that the US and Canada have had a constant covert scientific and security cooperation, at least dating back World War II, probably earlier. I mean, both countries belong to the larger five Anglo-Saxon eyes, the Oskanzukos, a strange name, made of the words Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and the US. Mm. And the Oskanzukus have created this worldwide infrastructure of listening stations that is known by the public as Echelon. So it is plausible that some Canadian individuals have been privy to secret US information concerning UFOs. Now, being Canadian, it means that once they were made aware of the secret information, it was much more difficult for the US to make sure that this knowledge would not be leaked out in one form or another. And here we have the fascinating case of Wilbur Smith. Wilbur Smith was a Canadian radio engineer of high standing within the Canadian government during the 1950s. In fact, he was officially in charge of Canadian UFO studies between 1950 and 1962. And he even built an observation tower that was supposed to pick up magnetic waves made by flying saucers passing by. An interview was arranged by the Canadian Embassy in Washington, D.C. for Smith in presence of another official, and they met with Dr. Robert Sarbacher, an electrical engineer and guided missile scientist, but most importantly, was then a consultant with the U.S. Research and Development Board. And that September 15, 1950, Sarbacher told Smith that that he was confirming earlier reports. We don't know what those earlier reports were, but we know that Sarbacher confirmed, one, flying saucers existed, two, they didn't originate on Earth, and three, the subject was the most highly classified in the U.S. government at a level higher than the H-bomb. Also, that very close relationship, we know now for the last few weeks, only October of last year, October 2012, there were newly declassified material that shows the U.S. Air Force had contracted, had a contract in the 50s with the now defunct Avro Canada to build an aircraft. Unlike anything seen before, you know, the Project 1794. I don't know if you've heard about that.
No, I haven't.
It's got as far as the initial rounds of product development and into a prototype type design. It looked exactly like a flying saucer. It was supposed to take off vertically and reach between Mach 3 and Mach 4, service ceiling of over 100,000 feet and so on. The project was abandoned after 2 years. But it clearly shows that the two countries had been involved in secret engineering, trying to emulate UFO technology.
Wow.
Those are the last files coming out from the U.S. Air Force. Then we have many famous sightings in Canada over major cities, and some of them lasting several hours. And you interviewed John Kelly about that in an earlier podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we have the former Minister of Defense, Paul Theodore Hellyer, PC. He had been the Minister of Defense in the 60s, and he's still the longest-serving member of the Queen's Privy Council, Her Majesty's advisor on state and constitutional affairs. This is why his honorific name, Hellyer PC. And over the last few years, he has officially declared amazing stuff. And here I quote, the United States military are preparing weapons which could be used against the aliens, and they could get us into an intergalactic war without us ever having any warning. The Bush administration has finally agreed to let the military build a forward base on the moon, which will put them in a better position to keep track on the goings and coming of the visitors from space and to shoot at them if they so decide. Extraordinary stuff. I mean, it's probably not related, but I was smiling when I read today the news about the NASA was getting ready to catch a small asteroid and place it by 2020 in a permanent orbit around the moon so that a forward base could maybe be constructed on it. I don't know if you read that.
I have not, no.
So probably unrelated. But Hellyer went on in December 2004. He called for a decade of contact, an era of openness, public hearings, publicly funded research, and education about extraterrestrial reality. In 2007... he demanded that world government disclose alien technology that could be used to solve the problem of climate change. In 2010, he accused Stephen Hawking of spreading misinformation about threats from alien. He said they were not dangerous. He said the reality is that they, aliens, had been visiting Earth for decades and probably millennia and have contributed considerably to our knowledge. So Canada is very much part of the UFO world debate and has contributed to what I call overwhelming circumstantial evidence. And circumstantial, again, and you mentioned that earlier, it does not mean it is weak. Actually, in the diplomatic and political world, we use circumstantial evidence all the time to form an opinion. That is what diplomats do every day. They talk to one person, to the next, and then they form their own opinion about a certain issue, and they send a diplomatic cable back to their capital. That cable, although made of circumstantial evidence, is indeed considered very seriously by decision makers. And as for the UFO phenomena, when you look at the pile of evidence you can find in the US and in Canada, and then you look at the rest of the world, you discover that many governments have been recording the same strange events everywhere. Mm-hmm. The French Cometa report, UK MOD5s, Russian files, the Belgium wave, Japanese politicians' declarations. Here in China, we have many sightings as well. During 2012, we had incidents when moving lights in the sky seen by many in coastal cities below were real enough to prevent commercial airplanes to land.
That's right. Yeah, there was a lot of news about that.
We just had a massive sightings on the Chinese side of the Himalayan border with India and so on. Just listen at your own podcast, Martin. Now, after 32 interviews, there is so much in there. Only on your website, you have gathered the source for overwhelming evidence for anyone not scared to look. And we learn new things all the time. I mean, every time we add a piece to the puzzle and the picture become clearer, I think every piece reinforcing each other. Mm-hmm. And because of the digital age, I think that if there is a cover-up, as Wilbert Smith and other investigators have reported, the definitive truth that everybody will come to accept will finally surface. Maybe less likely from the Disclosure Project itself. And governments love to hide things, and they're quite good at it. They think they should continue to do so. But finally, truth will surface, because for the first time in history, I'm sitting here in Beijing, and like billions of others, I can take a picture of the sky right now and share it instantly with you and the whole world on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So you cannot keep a lid on that. I think it's just a matter of time. You know, I also think that back in the 50s, in the heydays of the Cold War, when the US and USSR were working so hard for having an edge over each other, the US official at the time probably felt that if they could ever benefit from scientific discovery gleaned from a more advanced species, they should keep it for themselves. Stalin would have done the same. I remember the emotion here when Sputnik was announced, right, when it was revealed that Russia had gone into space orbit before America.
That was quite an emotional time, and they were even speculating that they could drop bombs on us from the satellite, you know, at that point. So, yes. So you've lived in different areas of the world. Can you tell the audience how the UFO phenomenon is perceived in different countries?
Yes, actually, in the book, I touch on that idea that other cultures have different attitude towards UFOs, about humans sharing the universe with other intelligent beings. And it was very convenient for me to have Alin Su, a Chinese-American, in the book. And I like her character a lot. She's very independent, brave, and charming at the same time. She's the perfect teammate for Paul Medoc. And additionally, although born in Austin, Texas, she has roots in Asia. And she is naturally familiar with Asian philosophy. And the way of looking at the world is very different in Asia from the West. In Buddhism, for example, you have much more than one reality. You have eight worlds. You have the human world plus seven others. And each of them has its own set of beings. And those eight worlds and those beings, some bad, some good, communicate, interact with each other and mankind. So that is 1.7 billion people who see the universe that way. Mm-hmm. And I have not mentioned that in Texas Lights, but you could also add the 1.6 billion Muslims. Islam is full of reference of alien beings, either here, living side by side with humans on Earth, and other intelligent beings scattered throughout the universe. I mean, the Quran is full of reference. Martin, I believe no one has quoted from the Quran on your podcast before, right?
That's right.
But in Surah 41, it says, "And among his signs is the creation of the heavens and the earth, and the living creatures that he has scattered through them, and he has power to gather them together when he wishes." And there are other references of guardians in the sky and so on. Hmm. Additionally, according to Islam, men were created together with jinns. Jinns are a kind of spirits. Every human also has hers or his double in the form of a jinn. And in Surah 15, it says, "We created man of clay and molded mud, and the jinn we created before of flaming fire." And jinns are sometimes good, sometimes bad, like man himself. They can appear and disappear, take various shapes, interact with humans, even seduce humans, form couples together. Islamic law has even a section dealing with relationships between man and jinns.
Can you also talk about Africa, where you said you live there as well?
Yes, and I think in the case of Africa, animism, as it is known, meaning the religion of Africa before the entrance of Islam and Christianity. Animism is full of spirits, and humans interact with spirits. So I think we had a very good description from travels of John Mack in Africa, who discussed with different people about, you know, being abducted by African spirits, and the whole experience looks very similar to alien abduction.
Wow, that's interesting.
I would be interested to hear about your sighting, Martin. What have you seen?
Jeez, I can't remember if I mentioned this in a podcast. Perhaps I have not.
I don't think you did, because I've looked for that, and I think I listened to all of them, but maybe I missed it.
Well, here, it's time I come out and come out of the UFO closet. And what happened to me was basically I had surgery back in 2006, and I was in California at the time, and a neighbor of mine owned a ranch in Carmel Valley, California, along the coast. And so it's a few weeks after surgery, I was relaxing in their hot tub. I was by myself. I was just looking up at the sky, and this is weird. I do a podcast on UFOs, and it's hard for me to talk about this because I always have like this feeling of ridicule is going to happen because it was.
You should not.
I know.
You should be courageous, like every one of your guests.
That's right. Well, it was.
It's a bit postmodern, but it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was such an unreal experience. And when I go back to it, it just seems like, you know, it couldn't have really happened, but it did. I was just sitting there, and I just happened to look up. Something sort of, you know, was moving and caught my eye. And it was a perfectly shaped disc, just as perfect as, say, a silver dollar, and about that size. And it was just like almost like floating in a continuous motion toward Carmel, and it had a silvery light glow. It was very early evening. I'm going to say about 7:30, 8 p.m., something like that. Had a really light glow overall, the entire like a metallic light glow. And I just looked up at it, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I didn't have a camera or anything nearby. I didn't even think about that. All I thought about was just watching it, and it made absolutely no sound. And at the time, I had never heard anyone say, I never really looked into it, so I had never really heard anyone else say that they made no sound, you know. So, you know, the whole thing was just not making any sense to me. And what happened was it sort of like turned and started heading more directly toward Monterey. So I jumped out of the hot tub. I went hobbled into the guest house at this ranch, called the police department on the phone. The only thing I wanted to know was if anyone else saw it, you know, and it was heading toward Monterey, and yep. Had anyone else seen this thing? Right away, there was sarcasm, and I was put on hold for over 15 minutes before I hung up, and then I kept it to myself. I told one person that I worked with, and for many years I kept it to myself, and I didn't even tell my son about it until last summer. The one person I told that I worked with was teasing me about it, and, you know, that's kind of the way it is, but I've always been into astronomy, and so it's been quite an amazing experience ever since then. And yes, that is what started this podcast. Thank you.
Well, that's a great story.
I got that off my chest now.
And it should not be a matter of ridicule. I mean, I've not seen anything that spectacular. I've seen strange things. I've seen twice in the Middle East. Green balls of fire above my car while I was driving. And in Scandinavia, I saw what looked like, you know, the swarm of silver balls. traveling in sync, and this could have simply be a balloon tied together. I don't know. And one night, during the same trip, I saw four purple points of lights in the distance after sunset, and one of them flew rapidly towards where I was standing, and I believe I saw a round shape of it through the thin clouds when it flew over the house. It looked exactly like a flying saucer.
So you've seen quite a bit, actually. And, you know, one thing I wanted to add about what happened with me, and I don't know if it happened with you, but ever since that happened, my eye is glued to the sky. I'm always looking ever since that happened.
Certainly. I definitely check the sky. I mean, the sky is always beautiful to watch. I think people don't look at it enough. I mean, the sky is something very, very beautiful to look at. Just for the moon. Mm-hmm. What I did have, I don't know if you have those, but I had those very vivid dreams of about UFOs landing, things like this. Now, I actually describe one of those dreams in the book.
Wow, that's interesting.
So I think it's relevant. Dreams are relevant. And if you start to read Carl Jung, you'll understand more and more why it is relevant, because it's part of your psyche who's trying to communicate something to you. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have any vivid dreams about UFO.
Not myself. No, I haven't. Do you think with all the technology that we have now, do you believe that within your lifetime that this whole thing will come out as the truth? We'll actually find out what's going on?
I think so. I think so. We are now so interconnected. We are in a time where the whole world is like one interconnected mind. You know, we talk about collective learning. It's very, very much the case today. The potential for the issue to come to light and to reveal itself once and for all, I think it's the potential is there. It can happen. Sooner than we expect, and again, it can be indeed flying saucers, material, and maybe the whole issue is maybe more spiritual, like some people have thought of.
A lot of people are speculating multi-dimensional or time travelers. Who knows? Could be part of what we see. You never know. I mean, who's to say it couldn't be? It's all very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Well, you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. And the book is Texas Lights with author Mark Sima in Beijing, China. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mark.
Thank you, Martin.
All right, so this is Martin Willis with Mark Sima, and that's it for today.
That was our guest, Mark Sima. And one of the things I had a talk with him about after we finished recording was I suggested to him that if he could figure out a way to get on coast to coast, it would be a great thing for his book. I know I have many thousands of listeners. I don't know exactly how many, but it seems like one of you who are listening to this show after listening to Mark were as impressed as I was. And if so, you may know how to get a hold of one of the Georges or John, Big John over there, or someone at Coast to Coast, a producer, perhaps, that could actually get Mark on that show. So if you have a way of doing it, drop me a line, martin@podcastufo.com. Thanks a lot for listening.